Hi, welcome to Digital Explain to My Mom, the podcast that cuts through the marketing wah-wah. My name is Sultan Simlali. I'm a business consultant passionate about marketing and technology. A couple of months ago, I had a hard time explaining to my mom what I was doing in my day job. I struggled so much that she politely said, interesting. Would you like more coffee? Talking about an experience with friends and colleagues, I realized that I was not alone. This is why I have decided to go on a quest. Find a marketing professional that will be able to tell me who they are, what they do, in words my mom would understand. Enjoy the show. And I'm super happy to be here today. I'm welcoming Niklas. Niklas is a partner at ARC, Arise Consulting Group, and Coramando, where he works with business development around marketing technology, MarTech. We'll talk about that. For clients and the 16 companies in the ARX Consulting Group. He is also a limited partner at First Party Capital, an investment fund investing in ad tech and MarTech startups in Europe and Asia. On the side, when he has time, or I don't know how he's doing that, but he's also a board member at student marketing company House of Education and a jury member of Association of National Advertisers Echo Awards, an international competition listing the best data-driven campaigns globally. He brings a wealth of experience in ad tech and MarTech, has been managing lots of campaigns, working with lots of brands. So today we'll be able to look at how can we make sense of ad tech and MarTech and be able to explain that in words our moms would be able to understand. So thanks, Niklas, for joining us today.
Happy to be here.
Super great to have you here. When I read your resume, I was like, wow, how many lives did you have? So, let's jump into it. So, what are you currently doing and how are you explaining that to your mom?
Right. Which is actually a situation that occurs now and then, when I do have to explain. I'm currently, as you mentioned, a partner at ARC, and I'm business developing around marketing technology. So, to my mom, I usually say that I help companies use tools for marketing in a better way. So that's pretty the sort of high level explanation to her. And it currently doesn't really follow with a follow up questions from her. So that's I think she's happy with that explanation, I guess. but more on diving a bit deeper. We work with a lot of different clients in Europe and globally. As you know, the marketing technology landscape is so vast and fast moving. So our role is pretty much as sort of explaining, sort of navigating and helping clients sort of direct their investments and their efforts and their marketing strategy according to some of the trends or some of the sort of paths that we see would be sort of best way forward for them to use both their marketing investments, but also some platforms and some of the trends that sort of will enable them to market themselves in a better way, or just stop doing things that they shouldn't be doing because it's a dead end sometimes. So it's kind of a, depending on the maturity and the sort of the position that company and the client is in, it can be completely different. It can be very sophisticated scenarios and use cases, but it can also be very, very basic things that they have forgotten along the way. So both high and low, which is where I'm very comfortable being, and I really do like being there because it kind of keeps you on your toes. So yeah, that's in a nutshell what I'm doing at ARC.
That is pretty interesting. So when you say that companies are either looking to the future and the more advanced things and the things that are being forgotten, what kind of things? I mean, the last one triggered me. So what kind of things do company forget?
I mean, usually when you, let's say they are buying a pretty expensive marketing platform or advertising technology platform, whenever we do implementations and they want to sort of start running on that platform or with that platform, it could be that something as simple as the sort of the data that they have collected through forms on the website or whatever is just bad. You know, it's email addresses are not collected the same way. Postal codes are not collected the same way. So we are constantly seeing that we have to format and sort of clean that data, which is sort of a very basic no-brainer, but it's hard. You know, it depends on where you collect it and how you collect it, and then depending on what you can collect. So it's that's some of the things that you would probably see everybody has to go back again and just make sure that this is sort of again and again cleansed and sort of just improved. So that's one of the things that we saw, sort of 9 out of 10 cases, there's always improvements to be made in that area.
Yeah, that's good. It's true. It's just one of the basic things that we tend to forget. Yeah, just like sorting out my papers and all my invoices that I still get home and everything. So it's usually the thing that you need to get right, but we tend to forget.
Yeah, and I mean, we are definitely always looking at the next big thing or the, you know, as marketers, we do like those glossy, you know, eye candy stuff. But sometimes, you know, basics is where to start.
And when you're looking at the glossy thing, what are the glossy things people are talking about?
You know, depending on where you on a sort of a, there's a lot of talk about identity, you know, with the changes that have been made in both from tech changes, both from Apple and Google and some of the other tech platforms, as well as the legislative changes that has been sort of are in motion across the globe as well. So with that, I mean, there's a lot of talk about identity and cookie-less marketing and how do you do that in a privacy-friendly way. You know, you have data clean rooms coming, which are one of the enablers, which is a pretty sophisticated technology to actually work with primarily second-party data, not first-party data or third-party that you traditionally are talking about, but second-party data in a very sort of anonymized and more privacy-friendly way. So data clean rooms will be, for the more mature companies and organizations, will be a tool to use, definitely, or are they already using. There are ways on you look at the on the privacy side as well, which is more, I think people are starting to understand that there needs to be a value exchange for me as a consumer to exchange my sort of details and data to an advertiser, to a brand. So first party data collection and incentivization on sort of why would I give up my data to you?
Yeah.
Those are sort of practices that everybody needs to be sort of improving as well. Retail media is booming. And if you don't, I mean, if just to explain what that is, it's Amazon started with retail media, sort of showing ads on their infrastructure and their sort of website real estate. And now, you know, they made $31 billion last year, and they're going to, that number will be sort of exceeded this year. And Walmart made over $2 billion on it last year as well. So it's a way for retailers and marketplaces and e-commerce platforms to sort of find new revenue streams. So retail media for sure, where you can build as a brand a relationship with a retailer that has a lot of loyalty data, a lot of first party data with very strong intent signals, meaning that they are able to sell this and monetize this in a much higher way because that data is very valuable. Specifically now, when we are more uncertain when the cookie is moving away, so that's something that we see exploding as well. And then I would say, you know, the data platforms is really interesting. And that's with data platforms, I mean, AWS, Google Cloud Platform, and Snowflake, where they are positioning themselves much more in a central position for us marketers. Where so, sort of both from a collecting standpoint, but as well as an activation standpoint, where they're able to push data into the marketing acquisition and customer acquisition channels. So it's an interesting sort of war going on right now, where companies from different places are sort of strategically positioning themselves.
So a couple of things. So we talked about first, second, and third-party data. So to clarify, first-party data is the data I'm giving to a brand. Second-party data is the company data that companies exchange with themselves, like a credit card company and a retailer, or they share information about me. And the third party is the data that you can buy on people. Like, I want to get not a list of people, but a list of cookies or list of an audience of people between 60 and 80 that have two houses or whatever. That's
exactly. Yeah. So you don't really have a relationship with the supplier of that third-party data, but with the first-party data, that's your own data from your own company that you have collected with consent. And then second-party data is basically partner data. You know, they could be a telecom company could exchange or collect data from a partner in in the finance industry or something. So those are the three. You also have zero party data, but that's, I would say, is something that's come up lately, but it's more on when you have given explicit consent. Mm-hmm. So I would say it's sort of a variation of first party data, which I try to avoid in order not to sort of overcomplicate things for people. Yeah. So first, second, and third are the ones that we usually talk about.
Okay. And then you mentioned the fact that people are monetizing their own data or actually giving their data, but they want something in exchange.
I think one of the things we see a lot now is that the cookie is going away. You know, we have, which, just to be clear, it has already been removed. You know, it's in Safari and Firefox. You haven't had it there for years. Mm-hmm. Now you only have it in Chrome, right? So it's if you sort of calculate, it's only going to be less than 40% of the actual user universe that is being cookied now, because the Chrome has 60% browser market share, and then, you know, not all users of Chrome are sort of cookied or addressable, as we call it. So it's going away. So there's definitely a need for new platforms to come in because of the sort of the amount of cookies available or addressable are diminishing. And there's, I would say, some of the best brands and publishers in the world are retailers. You know, they've been in the business for a long time. They have so strong signal data on users. You know, when you buy like a milk, you know, we know that Sultan will buy milk, and he's a heavy milk consumer. So we can probably add additional products to his cart, right? So it's so that data is very valuable. You know, the further away that data goes from you as a brand, so the third-party data will not be as valuable, of course, as the first-party data. And the value exchange there is that we speak a lot about you. You should collect first-party data. You should use it more and more because of the technology based on cookies that is going away. But how do you do that? I think what I see in the industry and clients talking about, let's use our first party data. But then that all starts with that you should have a lot of first party data. So you should be offering something in return to users to give to sort of incentivize them on giving away more of their data. And I think that is not spoken so much about. I think that one definitely needs more highlighting on how do you incentivize users through promotions or through giveaways or through sort of valuable information that you can give to them if they sign up or they give you more information. So a sort of a first party data strategy is something that's probably also very valuable as a base in your, or as a foundation as well in your marketing work for 2023 and beyond.
Because we've been talking about CRM, so customer relationship management strategy, for years on collecting data and then sending even paper-based mailings that were sent in the past. So are we kind of talking about the same thing, but then faster and better? Because the principle, I would imagine, is that you collect data from people to you provide them some exchange, like a coupon, a discount, or maybe some relevant information. And at the end of the day, you want to sell them more stuff.
Yeah. I mean, at the sort of the most sort of the primary use case is definitely to sell them more things. But then if you look at it from a retail media standpoint, you're able to, the more data you have and sort of the more qualitatively stronger data that you might have, you're able to monetize it. You're able to show sort of provide that and enrich your advertisers or the ones buying, let's say, on Walmart. Advertisers buying there, the more data they can have to enrich and sort of solidify their own advertising campaigns, the better and the more higher they're able, they're willing to pay for that data and that, that advertising campaign. So it's a flywheel with sort of positive reinforcements all the time. So it's a very interesting field to just see. And then if it's going to be $100 billion that's going to be spent on it or 160, that, you know, different numbers, but it's already going. It's, I think estimates are saying that 16-17% of the global ad spend will be on retail media in pretty short time. So
that's impressive. Because I've seen some numbers that, so the largest advertising platforms are Google, Facebook, and then you have Amazon, I think, on number three or very closely, actually. Yeah. And that's an interesting development. So at the end of the day, Amazon will be making money not by selling product, but just by providing advertising to brands to promote their products that they will be selling then on Amazon, which will be then a double bubble for Amazon and make them no richer. And then and then you want to be Jeff Bezos. Okay.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head there, Sultan. But it's that, I mean, imagine you have a product that you're selling, but then on top of that, you can actually monetize and find new revenue from advertisers that's looking for the same target audience that you have. Yeah. So that's an sort of an untapped potential and an opportunity. So it's a pretty complex setup. I mean, if you're if you come from the retail side, an additional benefit is that also that you have usually the marketing budget, but now you're tapping into trade marketing budget or sales budget that they would like to spend here as well. So it's kind of a it's a double or triple whammy, to be honest, because there are more budgets that could come into play here than just the normal media spend that marketers are used to. So it's a very interesting field to sort of be in and to look at. So more things will definitely happen in that space for sure.
Yeah, that's an very, very interesting development, looking at it. And then if you are looking at the other areas, are you... Let's use the bullshit bingo words. So the metaverse, are those kind of topics being discussed seriously by brands you're working with? Or
I would say brands are slightly hesitant to like the metaverse. And then, I mean, to be transparent, metaverse is, I mean, it became sort of mainstream when Facebook rebranded to Meta, right? But then you have Fortnite, who is already a metaverse where you can... You can buy characters, you can do a lot of different things in there.
Roblox. So,
Exactly. I mean, we both have kids and they most likely play Roblox and seem to have a lot of fun doing it. But there, I would say Web3 and Metaverse is being discussed, definitely. I mean, you can see Nike is probably the brightest shining star that has been able to sell and get revenue from it. But I don't see from a marketing standpoint, you know, there are, it's a very complex, right now, the main sort of use cases, I would say, is more for creators to monetize, you know, their products or the creations that they've done. So from a marketing standpoint, it's kind of hard to see big revenue potential and why you would invest time there, since it's so sort of community-based. You know, you are in your community, whether it's around finance interest or whether it's around whatever it might be. So it's the way we see clients doing some sort of short bursts and tests, but nothing major yet, to be honest. But it's a fact. I would say I'm pretty positive to Web3, even though I think it's going to take some more time. Metaverse is a bit, might be a bit more immediate effects to it. But then I think Web3 in the longer run will have sort of stronger potential for actual sort of uses or positive use cases for advertisers.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think Web3 brings again, I think what we discussed earlier about owning your own data, your first party data, and being able actually to decide what you want to do as a consumer with your data, whether you want to share it or not. And I'm not sure, but that's my personal feeling, that people will be savvy enough to be managing that. In a sense, it's an interesting development.
Yeah, so, I think you're 100% right. It's so complex. To understand everything. And I would say that there's a brilliant sort of idea on actually building a CRM, a loyalty program in Web3, mm-hmm. because of the granularity of your identity.
Yeah.
But you can also be there's also a lot of anonymity in Web3. Mm-hmm. You can call yourself CrazyFrog123 if you want to. But there's a sort of so it's kind of hard to find who you are. But on the other hand, you could have your universal identifier in Web3, and mm-hmm. you can build, so you can sort of be the same person, an email address, but it's going to be more sort of universally applicable as a CRM identifier in Web3. Mm-hmm. So I would, from a privacy standpoint, it's also interesting. So there's quite a lot of, we talk a lot about the financial sort of, you know, the NFTs and everything. But there's a couple of things that are interesting for marketers as well, I would say.
Yeah. That's indeed an interesting development. And when you think about identification, I think you talked about it at the beginning, is currently I'm using my Facebook ID to log into certain sites. I will not reveal my password here, of course, but it's the name of my dog and my birth date and my mom's nickname.
Great.
Just kidding.
Great.
But you have like the open ID initiatives. Like, I think here we are going much further. So it's not just about using your Google, your Gmail to log into other sites or Facebook to log into other sites, but more to not only log in, but then also decide on what do you want to give them as information and managing that actively, actually.
And it's all tied to your wallet as well. So there's a sort of an underlying engine or mechanism that sort of you could tie back to who you are in the end. But it's going to take more trickier to find out who you are, but it's the possibility is there. But it's also, when it comes to privacy, which has an effect on sort of the identifier or the cookie-less marketing strategy that you need to build in the years to come. Mm-hmm. That's Web3 is not there yet. You know, it's not connected to the bigger ecosystems either. So there's a couple of sort of, it's going to take some time in a couple of years from now. Mm-hmm. But it's definitely of interest, but it's very early days, Sultan.
Yeah.
Very early days.
No, we are early, but it's going to be an interesting area to look at. So at the beginning, we talked about ad tech, martech. What does that mean, actually? What is ad tech? What is martech? What is the difference? Sometimes it's messy, I think, for people to get a grasp on it.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you. I mean, to me, martech is sort of the bigger universe here. And martech is basically any systems or platforms built for marketers and helping marketers to do their job, basically. Mm-hmm. And I added built for because I think that's, to me, it's a difference when you see some of the sort of industry-wide charts on 10,000 marketing technology platforms, etc. That to me is just plain wrong because, marketers use Excel to a very high extent, but that's not a martech tool. You know, it wasn't built for marketers in the beginning. Same thing with Jira and Confluence and these tools that are also in this marketing technology chart, which I think is just, they shouldn't be there. So I think that's confusing. So to me, it's more these hardcore built for people like you and I and that are sort of the use cases are for marketers and it's sort of used and built for us. So that's martech, right? And then one subsegment of martech or marketing platforms doing marketing is advertising. And so ad tech or advertising technology, which is where I spent my time from 2010 and onwards, is sort of a subset or subsegment of martech. Sales technologies is another subset similar to ad tech. as well. So there's a couple of other sort of smaller ecosystems there, even though advertising is huge. But, you know, per definition, marketing is sort of, to me, the bigger universe. And then in there, you have different types of other smaller ones.
Okay. And so the ad tech will be everything I will be using for targeting customer or buying ads campaign on Facebook, Google, and et cetera, et cetera. Okay.
Correct. So it's it's anything from programmatic, you know, demand side platforms, supply side platforms to, you know, Google ads and Amazon ads and anything that buys. And I would say also related to ad verification tools, you know, like Integral Ad Science, sort of third-party data tools as well would come in there because they're mostly used in advertising. Yeah. So it's a big space as well. Even though I mean numbers on marketing in total, like we see like $2 trillion US dollars, right, on marketing as a whole. So it's not a small bucket of money. It's a huge space, which is also why you see a lot of Netflix coming up with an ad finance tier. You see Disney doing the same. When times are hard, you know, companies need to find new ways to make money.
Yeah.
And you know, sometimes the old saying of advertising powers the internet, there's some truth to that, right? You consumers aren't always willing to pay for a subscription, even though Elon Musk now is trying to prove it differently. But, you know, people tend not to want to pay, right?
No, indeed. And everybody can decide who they want to be on Twitter and just pay $8 per month to do that. But that's so I just registered as you, by the way. So
yeah, I can imagine.
Oh, no, that's great. And another topic, and I think it's related to ad tech, something you touched around the snowflakes, the Google platforms. So you have those companies, and I'll try to keep it simple. So those companies are usually storing data, sometimes in a smart way, or at least they say that they store data in a smart way, being able to link data together. And they want to be playing a role probably in ad tech and in martech, but at the same time, you have other players, like one of the companies I'm working for now, which provides a CDP, which is a customer data platform that also helps to use different sorts of data, bring them together to then personalize or buy ads. How do you see that playing field evolving?
Yeah, great question. And it's interesting that we managed to go 30 minutes without mentioning the word CDP or the acronym.
But I think it first.
Exactly. Congratulations. No, but it's I think CDPs are, they created a movement and something very interesting. So that there needed to be a sort of a centralizing or unifying platform in the middle, right? That we're able to collect and sort of work with the data and then also activate it, right? Mm-hmm. And then over time, people have tried CDPs and seen that it can be very valuable. Sometimes the implementation can take a long time. And then sort of on the activation side, maybe the CDP that you bought wasn't strong there. Or, you know, some of the CDPs have different profiles, as you know. Mm-hmm. But the idea of unification and unifying customer data and campaigns and segments and CRM data, it's promising proved out to be very valuable to brands and advertisers. So, and that's natural then that these platforms that we mentioned, AWS and GCP and Snowflake and others, you know, they are already sort of being the underlying foundation and infrastructure for CDPs. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty natural for them to see, hey, we could actually do something here. We are able to build native connectors to other platforms, like GCP now is coming out as a, you could pretty much build a CDP on top of it if you want to, and you have the sort of technical muscle for it. Mm-hmm. So the space is becoming more heated. The space is becoming more crowded in a way, but also more mature, which I think is a good thing. And a good thing that I see is that 2018, when it started to sort of take off, marketing managers and sort of heads of IT and other people are becoming more aware and more savvy on using mm-hmm. these types of tools, and also yeah. sort of the challenges that comes with it. But then there's something like reverse ETL coming up, which is, I think, is really interesting, because some brands might not need or want to go with a full-fledged CDP. Mm-hmm. Maybe they already did a lot of collection and work and already did a lot of sort of great analysis and sort of unification work in their data warehouse. But from there, they need a simpler way to send it out to their acquisition channels, to Google, yeah. to Facebook, to Twitter, to Snapchat, or whatever it might be. So there, that's where reverse ETL comes in. And with high touch and sensors and other players coming in the reverse ETL space. Now, last week, I think, you know, you both had Segment and Particle, two CDPs that were mm-hmm. announcing their own connectors and activators similar to reverse ETL. So it's also proving to be a very useful technology on pushing the data out on the other side, not just collecting it, but making it more actionable and operational, which I think is a very good thing. I also think that's the whole in like the CDP space is becoming more mature, but also more sort of useful in a way. I mean, I think there's a lot of different use cases for CDPs. I mean, if you can't do anything with the data, then, you know, I think it's not as valuable, of course.
Yeah, because I've seen a lot of conversation over the last 10 years of organizations speaking about a data lake, a data warehouse, and we'll bring all the data together. And it's usually kind of projects that, you know, when they start, you never know when they end. That costs a lot of money, and at the end of the day, you don't really know exactly what is happening. No. And probably what you're describing there is probably the tendency for some CDP project to be something similar, where it was all about let's gather a lot of data and put a lot of data into there, but doing nothing with it. It's kind of, and that's kind of what this reverse ETL. I was not aware of them, but. That's what they do. It's more on leveraging that data and then pushing it outside to activate it.
Exactly. I mean, you've worked as an organization. You worked hard to get everything into your data warehouse, right?
Yeah.
So why sort of replace that to something else that has sort of probably better collection ability, like a CDP, mm-hmm. but then from the data warehouse and onwards, you know, maybe that's where you really need help. So it's a sort of a quicker way to get up and running on this. Yeah. But then for some organizations, a CDP is definitely valuable, right? And can add a lot of value to the organization. So it's but I think it's the flexibility of having both options is great from if I would be a marketing manager or one of our clients, there are options to choose depending on your maturity, on how much bandwidth does your like IT department and developers have, versus as well on the people, you know, that are there. Or how much, I mean, are they able, I mean, for the first time in MarTech, let's say history, we're able to have more of the word composable comes up quite a lot, right? Yeah. You're able to sort of puzzle your architecture and your components in a way that you couldn't do before. It was more focused on marketing clouds, and they're still here, but there are sort of replacements, and you can sort of rip out and replace, but with that ripping out and replacing, you need an understanding, a sort of a strategy on why you're doing this, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, the Ferrari in the garage that we always, you know, people talk about, that you buy, you know, two expensive things and you use only 50% of it. It's still happening.
Yeah.
So I think the composable aspect of it is very interesting as well. And something that I think more and more marketing managers and CMOs will understand moving forward. So that one is also sort of giving a depth to the whole MarTech industry.
Yeah. Now I was just about to ask you a question about composable. So you beat me to it. So I think the composable vision is, personally, I think it's super interesting because it's all about, you had this fight between best of breed versus best of suite, where you have the best of suite players like an Oracle or Adobe saying, hey, buy everything from us. It's going to work fine. And the other player is saying, no, just buy only the product that you need and then you connect it. And both of those approaches actually have their value. I mean, the best of suite is really that it's supposed to work together, so less hassle for you, but it's more expensive. And the other one, you need to put it together, but it might be cheaper and you always get like the latest, greatest technology. And I think the composable is really actually bring those things together and allowing to actually met your best of breed work together and being able to actually connect things together.
Definitely.
In an easier way, which has been always the promise from the IT departments forever. is that composable topic something that you are discussing a lot with your customers currently? Is that...
I would say all the time, even though they might not use the word composable, but the you know, they are, you know, you have a single source of truth that you are sort of leaning into all the time. You know, we see Google Analytics sometimes being that single source, even though now with the sort of discussions in the EU on the privacy compliant sort of aspects of it, clients are looking into sort of, is this the right setup for us? Which I think they should do as well. But then also there's the maturity of marketing professionals is sort of improving a lot, and people are asking the right questions. But then the complexity, on the other hand, is also sort of you know, increasing quite a bit. But like composable, for us, we usually look at when we move into MarTech projects, it's about the people, the process, the tech, and the data. You know, clients think that the technology will solve everything, but without sort of people to run it or understand it or own it, then it's not going to happen. And then, like I mentioned with about the data, you know, if that's poorly formatted or just, you know, not useful, then it's not going to work either. And then processes, you need ways of working around, independently if it's a best of suite or best of breed or whatever you buy, you need sort of a process around it. And so there's quite a lot of things that needs to be in the right place. And no company is the same as, you know, it's everyone is uniquely sort of positioned in a context where they might need much more help on the people side or on the tech side if they're sort of, they need to upgrade, or on the sort of just the way they work. You know, it's not that easy always. But I think it's the understanding that you are able to switch and replace is just, it's also an added and improved dimension of the whole MarTech landscape.
Yeah. Now you see much more movement. And I agree with you on the maturity on client side and the level of, technical ability of marketeers is really impressive. So just seeing the marketeer as someone as just being a party planner and just working with an agency to roll out an ad, it's 40 years ago. It's ages ago. Yeah,
definitely. And I mean, with 25% of the marketing budget being spent on tech, you know, sometimes more than you spend on your staff, then you need to be a more savvy and a sophisticated buyer because you're buying tech platforms, right? So so the job many times is about both translating between the IT department and the actual marketing department. Mm-hmm. And that is also the role for consultants like us, for instance, that comes in and sort of making sure that both sides understand expectations, limitations, and sort of the outcome of this project. Mm-hmm.
And do you have an example of a situation you experienced recently where you faced that kind of challenge?
Good question. I mean, there's a difference, for instance, when it comes to business data and customer data, right? So I think the IT is many times about infrastructure, security, and making sure everything works, while marketing doesn't need all the business data that we're collecting. So from a sort of sustainability standpoint, you know, we could probably slim down a lot on the sort of big data thinking that we've had the last couple of years. But I mean, we have one example is from a client in the betting industry, for instance, that they built their own CRM platform because the IT department wanted to build it themselves because, you know, developers, they want to build stuff. And marketing wasn't really strong enough to say no to this because they felt, okay, let's build it. Let's build it from one of the bigger traditional vendors. And it was sort of a CRM platform that collected data from many different sort of physical locations and the website and app and everything. But it kind of, it was not, you know, done in a way that you couldn't really update anything sort of faster than 24 hours. Because if you did that, then it would break. So the whole sort of everything, CRM data, everything would break. So that put them in a situation where, okay, this is probably not the right thing to do. But that's also the heart of both the marketing organization and sales organization. So they were placed sort of in a very long sort of transition project where to move into some of the traditional cloud vendors instead, which would enable them to work faster. I mean, you don't have to work in real time. I would say majority of marketers don't really have that sort of need, but you would be close to near real time. And I mean, you've probably seen definitions on near real time can mean a couple of seconds to, I think I've seen like 12 hours. So it's different, but it was really, really limiting them to work as marketers, definitely.
And so now they're on a journey to go from that old self-built thing towards cloud-based, allowing them more flexibility, more speed. But we have this saying in Dutch, which I'll try to translate, which is an old organization plus new technologies, an expensive old organization. So so you need to work on all sides, otherwise you're not able to translate. So Niklas, to finalize, is there one piece of advice or one key takeaway you'd like to give to the listener to think about, especially now in November? It's the end of the year. We're all thinking about next year, good resolution. What should people think about? What are some wise words you could share with us?
Not sure if they will be wise, but I can share some words. I think one thing that we see a lot, like we spoke about the data issue, right? The data on the sort of the bad data in general. But another thing I think that we see quite a lot is that duplication of features in different platforms. So you're paying licenses, marketing licenses for features, let's say, in your CRM system and your marketing automation system, where they're basically the same. You know, that's two typical examples of the CRM system wants to, you know, gain market share. They add some more automation features in it. And the marketing automation system wants to do the same thing from the other side, and they add some CRM functionality to it, right? So do you really need both? You know, I think that could be a pretty easy analysis to look at. So that's one of the things where you could probably save money if that's what you need to do for 2023. So that's a recommendation we give to a lot of customers as well. Another thing I think for whenever Google decides to remove the cookies completely, it's going to be an issue for a lot of different companies. So I would say start thinking about how to work in a cookieless way today. Because again, you can't use cookies on Apple's environments, on Firefox, on the sort of app environments in general. It's a large chunk of users that's not addressable and targetable today. So start thinking. That starts with, again, first party data, the customer data that you have, sort of how are you going to use it, how are you going to keep it consistent, and sort of finding identifiers on people. And that could be as complex as you want it. You can build your own identity graph if you're that big and you have that development sort of muscle. Or you could just use sort of what kind of, is it unified ID 2.0 that you're going to go with? Or is it some other type of identifier association or project or initiative that you want to use?
Yeah.
But start today. I think that's the most important recommendation there.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think it all I think it makes sense because it all starts and ends with the customers. And if you're not able to identify your customers, you're nowhere. So
definitely.
Yeah. Well, Niklas, I want to thank you very much for being here today, having that great conversation. I think we talked, I think all the bullshit bingo card for MarTech and AdTech and everything. So we touch Composable, we touch Metaverse even.
Then it's been a great day.
So I really want to thank you for that. As part of the show notes, I'll be providing links to your site and also to your LinkedIn profile. So really inviting people also to connect with you. And thanks for taking the time and hope to see you very soon.
Thank you, Sultana. Thanks for a great conversation.
Thank you. Digital Explained to My Mom is a show from No Stress Media. To learn more about our shows, please visit nostress.media, where you can sign up and be alerted whenever we have a new episode. I'm inviting you also to check Let's Talk About CX, our podcast where we discuss all things CX related with practitioners, authors, and thought leaders. Check the show notes for a link to the podcast. Thank you.